Let's begin week number 12 of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word by returning to our story in Genesis chapter 33 of Jacob's return to the Promised Land. You know that he spent 20 years up in Padan Aram, growing his family very rapidly, and now he has come back, and he was worried about meeting his brother. But that's all been resolved now. And so Jacob can now get down to establishing himself in the Promised Land. Now, I'm of the opinion that he probably will visit his mother and father, and as he said he would, his brother, where they live, but he will first establish his own residence north of them. And that is the story that we take up today. So Genesis 33, verse 17, it says that Jacob journeyed to Sukkot. Now, Sukkot is going to get its name in just a second, but it is more than likely on the east side of the Jordan River, a little bit north of where the Yabuk River flows into the Jordan from the east. And we know that Jacob had been following the Yabuk River as he was having his experience with God's angelic camp and also wrestling with God and then meeting his brother. So we know he's right there in that region anyway. So he journeyed to what will be Sukkot, and he built himself a house. Now, previous to this, he's just been living in a tent. He's been living in a tent city, we suppose. It's not nearly as big as Jacob's was or Abraham's was, but it's starting to grow in size because he is fairly well-to-do as he's coming back from Padan Aram. But he builds himself a permanent residence, and he also made booths for his livestock, and therefore the name of the place is called Sukkot. Now, the word for booths here in this verse is the Hebrew word Sukkot. It's the idea of some sort of structure. It's not intended to be a house. It's used in reference to the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Booths that the Israelis have every year. And so it's a temporary structure in that sense. So my guess is that it's being used here in the sense of either cattle sheds or possibly corrals, as in places to keep the animals in, places that are not like stone walls, but rather more temporary see-through structures like a rail fence. So effectively, Jacob has just made himself a ranch. He's got a ranch house, and he's got all the livestock containment fences up. And so this becomes his place down in the Jordan Valley. And even though he's going to go up the hill on the other side of the Jordan to the city of Shechem, he appears to leave Sukkot in the hands of some of his servants to run the animals along the Jordan Valley and near the Jabuk or Yabuk River, which would have been a very good grazing area. It's possible that he runs his cattle here and decides to go up to Shechem to run his sheep and his goats. And we know that that's kind of been a tradition, that you don't have cattle and flocks near one another. Verse number 18. Now we go up the hill. Another description of the geography here. where the Yabuk joins the Jordan, a little bit south of Sukkot, there is a river that comes in from the other direction, from the west, that is tied to the city of Tirzah, which is up in the hill country of the ridgeline that is going to eventually be Israel. This river also drains the watershed of the city of Shechem. So there would have been a trade road that would have gone up from the Jordan River somewhere here where the Tirzah River joined the Jordan, and it would have gone up eventually to Shechem. So that's the road that he takes with his animals. Verse 18, Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Paddan Aram, and he camped before the city. So he goes up here, and what he has in mind, apparently, is to have a nice, safe place to run his sheep. Shechem is a major trade city. It's got a trade route that goes east and west through it. It's got a trade route that goes north and south through it. So it's a crossroads area. It gets its name probably from the fact that it's between two pretty good-sized hills, what are referred to as mountains, Gerizim and Ebal. And so the word Shechem means shoulder, or shoulders. So Jacob comes to this established city, and he makes a financial arrangement with the local authorities. Verse number 19. From the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. So he goes to the leader of the city, a man by the name of Hamor. Hamor has a son that is probably named after the city, Shechem. And Shechem the boy, we're going to come back to him in just a moment. But let's talk about the financial arrangement here. 100 pieces of money, it's a little bit difficult for us to be absolutely dogmatic about how much this was. They did not use coins yet at this time in history, so they weighed out pieces of silver or gold, and so the amount was based on the weight. And so the word shekel was first a reference to a weight. And each shekel eventually comes to mean 2 days' wages. That's the buying power that we've got in mind. So even though we don't have any type of weight that is attached to this amount of money, just the fact that there's 100 pieces of it, it wouldn't be unreasonable, I think, to assume we're talking about 100 shekels of silver. And that would be almost 3 pounds of silver. But more importantly, the buying power should be taken in consideration here. If the shekel of the later Old Testament had a similar value back in the past when it was a weight, then 100 shekels of silver would be basically 200 days of common wages, or about two-thirds of a year worth of wages. And so you put that into our context, think about the average salary in workaday world of America. We're talking about many tens of thousands of dollars. So Jacob pays for the grazing rights and the water rights of a particular piece of property to the we're going to call him the king of Shechem. And this transaction begins their relationship over several years, because some time passes here in a moment, and I'll explain why we know that. Verse 20, there, meaning on the site where he is encamped near Shechem, he erected an altar, a worship altar, and he called it El Elohei Yisrael, which means El, or God, is the God of Israel. So this is a reference to El Shaddai or El Elyon, God, my God, or the Most High God. This is the Creator God that Abraham was called out of Ur by and had a relationship, a faithful relationship. This is the God that Yitzhak, Isaac, had a relationship. And now it is the God that Jacob has a relationship. So there was a worship site here put by Abram when he first came to Canaan. He put it right next to a great tree called Moreh, which is Hebrew for fear or respect. And so I am of the opinion that Jacob built his altar pretty much at the same place that his grandfather had built the altar. He probably selected this campsite, this encampment area, for that very reason. And so now he is following the pattern that we've seen by the patriarchs before him. You find a place to live and carry on your work, and there is where you build your worship site, so that you can have a regular relationship with the God who loves you and who has called you to follow him. Chapter 34 now moves to the story of Dinah. And this is what it says, verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. Now Dinah was apparently born right around the same time as Joseph. And we know Joseph's age and where he fits into the chronology. When Jacob and his family left Paddan Aram and came to Canaan, first to Sukkot and then to Shechem, Joseph would have been 6 years old, which means that Dinah must have been about that same age, about six. So the story we're about to read won't fit with a young girl like that. The story fits much better with a teenager. Now, the next story of Joseph is going to be after this incident causes Jacob to move his family again, and Joseph will be sold into slavery by his brothers when he is 17. And so it would appear to me that we're probably talking about Dinah being right around that same age, 16, maybe 17, when this story takes place. And that tells us then that Jacob's been at Shechem for about 10 years. He's developed a relationship with the people of Shechem over a 10-year period. And his boys and his daughter have grown up right here next to the city of Shechem. And so here is teenage Dinah wanting to go out and to see the women of the land. Now, why? She is interested in things dealing with adult womanhood. She is probably already thinking about getting married, having children of her own. She is probably interested in what do girls my age and a little bit older than me do here in Shechem. So she goes into town And it doesn't seem like it's a one-time event. It seems like it's happening on a regular basis. After all, her father's tent city is just outside of the city of Shechem. So think of her as the typical teenage girl, 16, 17 years of age, and she wants to go to town and check out what are the other girls doing. Now, what happens when teenage girls go out with other teenage girls? You're right. They run into teenage boys. Verse number 2. Let's introduce him. When Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, and so this is the prince of the land, when he saw her, now, I want you to listen very carefully to me as I'm going to do this next part. I am going to read to you what the English Standard Version has, but then I want to talk to you about what I believe the original language intended to communicate. And this is going to be a very detailed and involved issue, so we're going to take our time with it. So it says, when Shechem saw Dinah, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. Now, other Bible texts, English translations, will even use the word rape in this context. And I object to that. Because when we consider the full grammatical context of this story, I don't think this is a story about rape. I think this is a story about teenagers. Shechem might be a little bit older. He might be in his early 20s. Young people getting infatuated with one another and allowing their emotions and their hormones get the best of them, and they get involved in sexual relationships before making arrangements to get married or being married. And so the literal words of verse number 2 are these. He took hold of her, and he lay with her, and he humbled her. Now let's start with that last word first. In other parts of the Old Testament, the word humble is used in a premarital sexual activity context about not following proper betrothal customs. In other words, not getting married first before having sexual relationships. And so humbling is a word that describes inappropriate social activity. So let me read to you my own translation of these words, where I don't try to use negative understandings of the words, but rather a more positive understanding of the words in the context. So Shechem saw her, and he embraced her and slept with her, and because they were not married first, didn't treat her in the appropriate fashion. Meaning, they had premarital sex. They didn't get married first. Now let's go on to the next part, where I want to develop my argument that this is not a rape story. There are rape stories in the Old Testament, and those rape stories have verbiage about force being used. One of them is the story of Amnon and his sister Tamar. And the words by force are literally in the text. There's zero doubt it's a rape. Those words of force are not in the text here anywhere. Instead, you have all sorts of positive emotional wording. You have things about falling in love, such as in the next verse. that seems to go with my thesis that this is all about two teenagers allowing things to get out of hand. Verse number 3, talking about Shechem, his soul, so his personal feelings, his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. Now you see those that word or the verb there, was drawn? That is the word for cleave. And it is the exact same Hebrew word that you will find in the Genesis 2:24 context of talking about marriage, as in a son will separate himself from his mother and his father and shall cleave to his wife. That's the wording that's found right here. So he is feeling like he wants to spend his life with her. Continuing, he loved the young woman, and this is the typical word for love. He has a positive emotional feeling toward her, and I would suggest to you the next line tells us that she felt the same, because it says that he spoke tenderly to her. The wording is, and he spoke to her heart. So the focus is upon her choice-making aptitude, her heart, and her responding to his word, or to his words toward her. So I think this is really good evidence in verse number 3 that we're talking about a young man falling in with a young lady, falling in love with her, she with him, and the two of them jump the gun, they have sexual relationships with one another, and now they decide we really ought to get married. That would be the right thing to do. So that's what we see next in the story, verse number 4. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife. So please make the arrangements for her and I to get married." Now verse 5 says, Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah. Again, I think that's a little bit more negative word than's necessary in English. The word in Hebrew is literally humbled, meaning he had not treated her according to the social norms. You're supposed to wait until you get married to have sexual activity. And he didn't do that. So when Jacob heard that that is what had happened, his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. So Hamor is going to show up here in a little bit. And Jacob is finding out, possibly from Dinah, that Dinah and Shechem have been sexually active, and that Shechem's dad is going to ask for Dinah to get married to Shechem. And so Jacob wants to wait until his sons, the brothers of Dinah, are in the house to take part in the marriage negotiations, the betrothal negotiations. Verse 6, Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. Now the sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he'd done this outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. Again, it's not that they're mad about a rape, I don't think. They're just simply mad that their little sister has had somebody touch her in a sexual fashion. Now, Dinah has 6 full brothers that are older than her. And she's got 5 half-brothers. One of them is probably slightly younger than her. That'd be Joseph. And you know how sometimes big brothers have fits about their sisters becoming sexually active. And it doesn't even matter sometimes that they're being hypocritical, because a few of them are sexually active with single young women themselves. And so double standards are fairly norm in human history, aren't they? Now, again, since Dina is around 16 or 17, then that makes her brothers in their late teens, and some of them are in their early 20s. And so that's what they're upset about, and Hamor is going to have to respond to their frustration and anger. Verse 8, Hamor spoke to them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please, give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us, and take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us, and the land will be open to you. Dwell and trade in it, and get property in it." So he's basically saying, let's bump up our relationship another notch. You guys, you've got sons that are getting old enough. You've got Dina that's old enough. Why don't you guys start marrying into our families, and we can all be one big happy community together? Verse 11. Shechem also said to her father, because he's there. The young man is there as well. Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your sight, in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will do. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." Now that again sounds like an affair of the heart. It does not sound like a man that has raped a girl and now wants to make her his wife. Well, we're out of time, so let's go ahead and mark our place right there, and we'll come back and develop this story a little bit more tomorrow.